y'all. Welcome to another episode of Black Packing. And on today's episode, I have Tykesha with me.
Hello.
And tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a Black queer woman, she, her pronouns, who's currently residing and living in the southern region of the Netherlands. I've been over here for about 3.5 years. Work sent me over here. I get a lot of questions on how did I get abroad. I work for an American university that has a study abroad campus in the Netherlands. And my position is a brand new one, so I'm in an inaugural role as the lead student affairs officer for the campus. So for anyone who may have made the choice to go to college or university in the States, you're familiar with student affairs. So I'm basically kind of like the dean of students for a small facility, very beautiful. We actually, the university owns a castle, and I live on campus, and I act as kind of, you know, as the lead student affairs officer on our campus. That also includes preparing students for travel in Europe. So I get to do that, and I get to manage and supervise and lead a group of about 8 Dutch European staff under my purview at our institution. So it's been great. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, so I feel like I still in so many ways feel like this little Black girl from Brooklyn who, you know, grew up, you know, like many of my fellow 80s kids growing up, and would have never thought I'd be here today. So it's really cool.
Yeah. How did you kind of end up in that position?
Before this position, so also know that I think a lot of people contact me and think I'm a lot younger than I am. So I just turned 43 this year. So I've been in my field of work now for 20 years, starting in 2020. So I'm a student affairs officer through and through. That's what my master's degree is in. So I've been a hall director. I've been an assistant director of housing. I've also spent 10 years being a diversity officer for a college campus, where I specifically work with LGBTQ students, students of color who identify as Black American, Asian American, Latino American, anything under the sun, underrepresented populations on a university campus. So I did that for 10 years, and I was starting to feel a bit burnout. I think for anybody who's doing diversity work on any level, sometimes we have to step away. And I was at that mark around my 8th or 9th year where I started to kind of job search, looking at where I wanted to go. I was ready to leave Boston. I lived in Boston for 10 years by that time. And I was just ready to kind of make a move. And my institution at that time came to me and said, hey, we have this brand new role at our campus in Europe. Now, we all know of this campus. It's been there for 30 plus years. But as the person, as you're working on the primary campus, you don't get to go out there. So it's kind of like, why are you asking me this? So I talked to a couple of really good friends of mine who are entrepreneurs in education, and I was like, what do you think about this? Because truthfully, initially, I didn't want it. I was like, I'm good. I don't want to do this. And I now know that was speaking from fear. And because I was about to turn 40, and I was just like, I want to get married and settle down. This is not going to help in that area by moving abroad. But I had nothing to lose. So I said, why not? I submitted my resume. I wasn't the only one asked. They were hiring an inside candidate. They wanted someone who already knew the university systems well. So I submitted my application. Still was kind of very like, I'm not sure if this is for me, but why not? Let's test it out. And I did, and I got offered the position. I got offered the position along with another school that wanted me to come out to Philadelphia to interview, and I ended up choosing to take the position at my current institution to go out and go abroad because it was going to be, I felt at that time, this is going to be a change, a big change in my life.
You went for it.
I did. That's I always awesome. Tell people when I talk about this, I said I took a chance on self by doing this. It was just me. At that time, I was single. I have a little furry dog. That was one of my stipulations in my contracts, that my dog could come with me. He's about 10 pounds. He's a poodle mix, and he's probably the most loved person on our campus. students, faculty, and staff. He's in the office with me every day. He's not on leash. The students come by the office. It's a great way for me to get in with the students also, too, because my little dog. And we live on campus, so they constantly are seeing us. So we're not like, they're not weirded out when they see me and the dog because they know I'm taking pictures. So it's been a great experience. Thus far, I have a great supervisor who also has lived abroad, black male back in Boston. So he's been a great mentor to talk about what it means to be black and abroad. So that's been, that's you know, my story in a short. And I've traveled to now in the 3.5 years. I'm going to Istanbul in about 2 weeks. And that'll make my 20th country in the 3.5 years that I've been here between work and personal travel. That I've explored some places I've been to multiple times, like Paris, London, Berlin. I've been to a handful of times for work and for personal, but I've traveled to at least 20 countries within Europe and outside. I've also been to Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Thailand, Morocco twice this year. So it's definitely kind of like my explorer has exploded.
Yeah. Had you traveled outside of the country before you took this job?
I had been to places, you know. I had done like 2 cruises with my family. I had traveled to Cancun with a partner at one point in time. I had been to London. I had family in London. My background is my mom is from Mississippi. My dad is from West Africa, Sierra Leone. So I have family in London. So I had been to London, but early 20s. So I had traveled some. I traveled a lot through the United States. I went to college in Buffalo, New York, so right near the Canadian border. So I have been up to Canada a bunch of times, but not like I travel now. My travel now is on a whole other level.
Yeah. How are they? How would you say they're different? I mean, they're obviously very different, but how have they been different to you?
I think, you know, you hear a lot about, you know, are you a tourist or are you a traveler? For me, I think I'm an explorer. I think I'm more fall into the traveler versus a tourist. Now, I think before this, I was very much like about, you know, I think like a lot of Americans, especially a lot of black Americans, we see what we see on TV, the news and media, what tells us about what places are like. And what when once you're over here, and you're in a place like Europe, you realize how much safer it is in the United States.
Yeah.
And there isn't really many places I won't go by myself. And I'm also a solo traveler, so I'm not traveling with anyone else. So I'm traveling by myself 95% of the time. When I want to get up and go, I get up and go. I make my plans, I make my flight reservations, and I go. For me, I don't stay in fancy hotels. I usually stay in Airbnbs. I love staying in a neighborhood, eating at the little bakery on the corner. For me, I don't want to stay in the, like, touristy area. I don't.
Right.
I do map out things like public transit. I live by public transit when I travel. So for me, that has to be an easy access for me to, you know, get on a bus or a train to get from my area to maybe some of the touristy spots. I like to go off the beaten path on the tours that I choose. So I don't choose. I really avoid the big, you know, massive groups of 40 people walking down the street. To me, that gives me anxiety.
Yeah, same.
So I've been able to figure out smaller tours, more unique things. I am big on finding out what the black communities like there in that area. And you'd be surprised, in Europe, there's so many pockets and places about black culture and how we got there. So for me, anytime I travel, I'm always looking for that. If that's an option, I'm usually going to book one of those tours.
Yeah, that's awesome. I definitely like a good mix of like touristy and like being a little secluded when I travel. You know, because there are certain things I'm like, I'm here, I do want to see this thing, and then I see it for 5 minutes and I'm like, all right, I'm done, just because there's like usually people everywhere, and usually like in like really touristy areas, it's like where you're going to most likely be mugged or something like happen to you because you know they know it's touristy.
Very, very true.
What's been your most I guess recent trip over there in Europe?
My most recent trip, I went to Dublin for work, and I went to Belfast. I took 90 American students to Dublin. We do 2 academic excursions a semester, so that's another way I get to travel, is I usually go with students, and when I get to go with work, I get to kind of do the big touristy stuff and some of the great museums, which is awesome. But then sometimes I'll go back to these cities and explore on my own because I want to do my own thing, also too, that's not so academic focused. So I went to Dublin, but we made the 2-hour trek up to Belfast, Northern Ireland, which I don't know if you know any history about how basically Belfast is split in half by Catholics and Protestants.
Yes.
And there's legit a wall between these two communities.
Oh, I didn't realize
it's
that.
It's very Berlin, East, West Berlin-esque. If you've been to Berlin and seen the Berlin Wall, like, I was just kind of like, it's 2019 and people are still living this way. And we got to, what was really cool, we got to do a tour of both sides. So we got to speak to people, a representative from each side, as a tour group. And we broke down into like 4 groups, and it was like 20 people per tour or something like that. And we got to hear each community side of the story on why it's this way. They do have a gate, like one gate that you can cross over, and at 7 p.m. at night it closes. So of course we're like, so what if you're on the other side, like handling business? They're like, well, you just stuck there for the night. And I'm like, wow.
Wow. What time do they, I guess, close it?
7 p.m.
Wow.
So 7 p.m. I can only imagine when, like, summertime, late spring, sun's still out, and it's just like, well, we want to close up the gates, you know? And I'm just like, that's crazy.
Yeah,
but
that is crazy.
It was so worth going to see. Then I went over to Switzerland for a work conference. Switzerland's beautiful. I only got to see the Lugano because that's where my conference was.
I was
visiting another university. So it's near the Italian border. So it's crazy that near the Italian border, they speak Italian in that part of Switzerland. So I was just like, huh? But they speak Italian in that part of Switzerland. But it was really cool, very hilly. So know that you're going to be, you know, walking some hills if you go, some serious hills if you go to Switzerland. And then I went to London. This is all over my fall break. The students have a fall break. So I went to Switzerland for a couple of days. London is one of my favorite top cities. So I always end up there at least once or twice a year.
Wow. And so you usually, like, sometimes you're taking these groups of kids. How long are y'all in certain places for?
No more than usually 3 to 4 days.
Yeah.
So 3 to 4 days, we usually kind of take over a hostel, and, you know, book, you know, it's meant, you know, beds for about 90 to 100 people. Usually it's myself and 2 of my staffers. So we usually stay at the hostel in single rooms, of course, not with the students. And, you know, we make sure they're, you know, where they're supposed to be. People get sick, things happen. We're there for kind of emergency response and making sure everybody's okay. And, you know, you're in a different country, so we do a lot of discussion beforehand about their travels and what it means to be there. And to me, I always say, you know, don't be that American who, you know, Americans take up a lot of space.
Yeah.
And we just think people should conform to what we need. So I talk a lot about that with students. My students also do a lot of independent weekend travel, so we're not always with them, which is great because they're adults, especially in the European sense, because Europeans, you know, when they turn 18, you are an adult over there. You know, you can drink. When you go to university, you take care of all that. There's no student affairs. There's no parents, you know, calling to check up and get things done for you. You were very much an adult. So we talk a lot about that with our students who are usually in their sophomore year who are coming over for this semester abroad.
Yeah. Wow. And
yes. So, you know, for our students, I'm grateful that we're not in Amsterdam because I think there would be a lot more problematic situations.
Yeah.
I think there would be a lot more lack of studying because there's so much to draw you outside.
Right.
Being a new place, wanting to explore. But at least for us now, they have class Monday through Thursday.
What's the town like that you're living in? Is it a lot different than the campus? Like, is it, once you leave the campus, it's kind of like a different world?
Yeah.
Is it like a college town?
No, it's not a college town at all. It is legit. It's not even a town. It's considered a village.
Oh,
so
wow.
We got one main street that has, you know, we don't have a supermarket in our town. That's how small it is. So it's a very quiet little town. Usually, like, the stores that are in our town, we have a bakery, we have a butcher, we have a convenience store. Usually by 5:30 p.m., they've all closed down for the day.
Wow.
They're not open on Sunday. They have limited hours on Saturday. So it's a quiet little town that we're in. So on campus, you know, I compare it to, like, being in maybe a little small village or town of the South, of the American South. Kind of, you know, there are fields around us, cornfields around us, and then you have this huge, you know, castle that sits, that's a 14th century castle that sits really right in the middle of the town. That is where we are. They're very happy to see us because, for one, it's a revenue, because our students are coming in, they're spending money in the town. Awesome. We talk to our students about being respectful. The townsfolk are very friendly to us. For me, myself personally, they're very friendly to me, I think, because they know I work at the school, the university. When I first arrived there, you know, they didn't have any clue who I was, so it's a lot of stares. I'm also a Black woman who they don't see many people that look like me out there. These aren't Amsterdam, you know, Dutch people. These are Southern country Dutch people.
Yeah.
So no one has ever been mean or rude to me. But I definitely have gotten stared at. I'm a bald head, dark-skinned Black woman. I'm not small in nature. So I'll be riding my bike. You know, I'm Dutch now. I have a bike. Riding through town.
I know, it's very Dutch.
Initially, they just be like staring. Now, you know, they wave when we're passing by on bikes. Hey, hey, you know, because they know I work for the university. I live here. I've lived here for quite a few years now. I'm going to the little post office to maybe pick up a package. They know me in there. So it's gotten comfortable, but I'm not hanging out and socializing in town. If people ask me that, they're like, well, what do you do? And I was just like, I work. I have a home on campus. So for me, I've had to get used to, which I think has been a good thing, and I think we all should be able to, is learning to really love my own company. Student Affairs is not a European thing. It's American. It's American creation, foundation. Other schools outside of the U.S. are starting to do it. I also see that there may be space for me creating new roles and an American Student Affairs officer going out to train international schools on student affairs work, especially with all the American students that are going abroad and the expectations sometimes our home universities have about how you take care of our students. So for me, I don't know. I'm keeping my options open. I think places I would love to live, like in London. I love London. It reminds me of New York a lot. I think also places like London, I don't feel like I'm the only one.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, London, I mix in. Nobody looks at me twice. It's just like, you know, I'm there, and I've made some really great connections and friends in London. So I feel like if I went to London, I would have a ball.
Yeah,
going to London. But London is also expensive. I think about the continent of Africa, you know, could I go there? I'd be open to it if it's the right contract, right position, right school, right people, right? So, you know, everything has to line up and be right. And what my commute would be to get home, what that would look like for me. That is key. I know wherever I go next. Or there's some other piece I'm just like, maybe it's just time to go home. Maybe it's time to go home, land a position that allows me to travel. But having my home base be in the United States.
Yeah. That's possible. I really like the idea and kind of agree with you that there seems to be space for you to potentially continue to create these like student affair programs internationally. I think that sounds really dope.
Yeah, that's what I think for me, what I would love. I think that's what I would love to do. I think I would love to, before I left the States, I used to do a lot of diversity workshops at other institutions, and I miss that. I miss going and meeting different types of university students, because every university student is different at each school. And I said, well, wow, what if I can make a niche, kind of a space for myself back in the States about being able to come in and talk to American students who are going to study abroad. And not just talking about, oh, you know, this is how you pay a bill, or this is how you, but let's talk about the nitty gritty of culture and being aware of your surroundings, not just for safety. I'm very aware of my surroundings when I travel, not only for my personal safety, but also I like to just mix in if I can, so I'm not seen as a tourist, and just go about my business. So I think there's a space to be able to talk and teach students about what it means to be abroad, and what to be aware of, how to be respectful of people's culture.
Yeah.
I've watched students, you know, when food or different things were offered to them, and then they kind of turn up their nose. And I was just like, to me, that's common sense. I'm like, what? What would you do? If you don't want it, that's fine. Be like, oh, no, thank you for the offer. But I've seen students like, oh, like, because they didn't like the way it looked or they weren't sure what it was, you automatically, oh, you know, and I'm just like, that's so disrespectful. Do you realize that? Do you realize what your nonverbals are saying? So I feel like there's a space there for that to better prepare them to go abroad.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. How do you feel being a Black queer woman has affected you traveling, or affected certain spaces that you've been in while traveling and living abroad?
I think that it depends on how I'm presenting that day. I'm very much androgynous. So I'm a person who, like today, I was wearing a fedora, my, you know, ripped up jeans, a pair of boots, leather jacket. But, you know, I also love my high-waisted skirts, and, you know, down to the floor African print skirts that I wear. So for me, it depends on what I'm showing up as that day. Most of the time, I'm kind of more on the androgynous side of the house. So people are like, we're not sure. I have been called, I'm bald. My hair is really short, so from the back, I have been called sir quite a few times since I moved abroad, but that should happen in the States too. But I think it's happened more here, especially in places like Thailand, Morocco, where I've been, and then I turn around and I'm, you know, a busty, and I definitely, you know, more feminine feature face. They're like, oh my God, sorry, ma'am. And I don't take offense. I think we have to be very careful about that. I don't take offense. I don't, you know, I understand from the back, in this culture, women have long hair. You know, how dare you cut your hair off? You know, no one has ever asked me that, but I also understand culturally that's their thing. No one ever has said anything to me as a tourist, as a traveler. And so I think I'm very easy. I think where for me, it can get complicated if you have a partner and you're traveling. I do have a partner now. She resides in the States. So I still travel majority of time by myself. We talk about travel together, but I'm very conscious of we have to be conscious of where we want to go. Like, one of the places I want to really go really badly is Bali. I want to go spend about a week in Bali. I've heard great things. You know, I belong to quite a few Black travel groups on Facebook. I don't worry about me going by myself, because I know I'm not always read, you know, when you're traveling solo, I'm not read as like, oh, she's a lesbian. But when I'm with a partner, my partner is more femme presenting. I worry about what people assume we're together and we're out. Now, if we're in places like London, Paris, Amsterdam, I don't give, you know, a hoot. Thailand, another place, great. But places like Morocco, I've been twice this year. Awesome, loved it. I probably end up going another time next year. If I go with my partner, it's with the understanding that out and about we're kind of friends, because I don't want, it's quick, easy to say, I don't want no smoke.
Yeah.
I don't want any issues.
Right.
I think people are quick to be like, well, I'm just, you cannot just go. That is an option too. And I don't kick anybody. If you say I'm not going to go, that's cool too. But as a solo traveler, I found no issue traveling. And in some of the travel groups I belong to that are very heteronormative, they're quick to say if a, you know, gay couple or someone who's LGBTQ identified comes into the group is like, oh, I heard about this country, but I heard they're kind of homophobic. Can anybody fill in? And they're quick to be like, well, if you're going to go with your partner, just don't put it out, you know, for everybody to see. And I'm just like,
wow.
Y'all realize how hetero that is?
Yeah, right?
And that y'all don't have to worry about that?
Yeah.
You can hold their hand. I'm not talking about making out on the street. I'm talking about holding hand, a simple gesture, touching someone on their back, or any of that could be read. You know, I worry about that. I have not run into any situations, but my partner and I have talked about, you know, if we go somewhere, what we have to be mindful of. And I think a place like Bali is somewhere I probably will end up going by myself. Because I just don't want, because my thought going to Bali, you hear the stories, you know, the American dollar does well there, same kind of probably similar to Thailand. You can go live like kings and queens and have a house and have a chef. I would love to do that in Bali. But I also want to be comfortable in our home. So if our house cleaner and our chef aren't comfortable with who they're serving or who they're working with, is it going to be a problem for our week there?
Yeah, and like, is it worth it?
I think about those things. Yeah, to me, I'm just like, I'd rather go somewhere else where we know we're not going to have any problem. I'm a big fan of Thailand. Thailand's pretty, they don't have, you know, gay marriage, but they're uber LGBTQ friendly, from my experience. And I spent about a week there. And I definitely want to go back. I can see that being a place to like easily go for like honeymooning, for gay couples, that I feel like you won't run into issues. Maybe that you would, and maybe a place like Indonesia, and then Bali. There are probably people who have gone and been like, it was fine and it was great. And I'm like, I'm glad you went and you were safe and it was awesome. I don't know if it's a chance I'll take.
I feel you. Mm-hmm. And my hair is relatively short too. Mm-hmm. I wear it natural. And I've experienced like the same issues while traveling. Mm-hmm. Being called sir, and like you said, it does happen in the United States, but it just does happen a little bit more when you're traveling. And mm-hmm. you know, I've had that issue like walking into a bathroom and someone like stopping me and being like, no, like you're supposed to use that bathroom. And I'm like, you know, I'm a woman, and they're like very confused, you know, because my hair is short, and I kind of have like androgynous features, and I'm relatively small. So yeah, that happens to me all the time when I first started traveling, and it happened to me. It hadn't really happened to me in the States. So when it first happened to me, it was when I was traveling. So I was a little bit more like insecure about it. And it's just something I've gotten over, but it's nice to kind of hear that from someone else that's happened to. Not nice, but it relatable. To hear that from someone else.
It definitely has happened, and for me, no one has, you know, hasn't been to the point of like, no. It's more, they're just like, usually it's from behind for me. And when I turn around, they're like, oh shoot, you know, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, we're good, you know, can I go to where I'm going now? The institution I work for, we have a large LGBTQ student population that comes over, and I also have quite a few, at least one or two a semester, who come over who are trans-identified. That's who I'm more worried about.
Yeah.
When traveling, because I worry about passports, because some of them, their passports, there that hasn't changed, and their presentation is different from what that maybe that picture is.
Right.
I haven't heard of anyone in my 3.5 years yet having major issues at airports or anything like that. But I know. A student I have this semester, we talked about it, and she was saying how she really thought about changing it before she left, but it's such a large process, and which I understand, but and she really wanted to come over, and you know, she should be able to, but she, you know, she worried about, you know, what her passport states and what she looks like now, but so far I haven't heard her say that she hasn't come and shared anything saying that she's had challenges traveling. She was more scared about coming through TSA in the United States, leaving the States,
yes,
than she was about being here in Europe, which says something about our own systems. That, you know, I find also, you know, airport security abroad is way more friendly than the United States TSA. United States TSA, you know, I understand, I try to, you know, understand the folks who are working at the airport. You know, they're not the ones making the major decisions, but they are just some very unpacky people many
yeah.
times.
Yeah, they are.
And I find in Europe, they're just not. They tend to be very friendly. Anytime I'm going through Amsterdam Airport, when I'm flying back and forth to the States, that's the airport I fly in and out of, they're uber friendly. And, you know, just...
Yeah, I mean, they'll go through, they go through all of your luggage. That's for sure. But I mean, I get it. They will take every single thing out of your bag, but I get why. But I know with the TSA here in the States, I know some airports, the machines that they go through, that they have to choose either male or female, before it scans their body.
I haven't experienced that one.
Yeah, I haven't experienced that, but I've had a friend that experienced that, and it was a very uncomfortable situation for them.
I think for me, sometimes like students and my fellow colleagues will talk about, and specifically in Europe, like, oh, there's this little quaint town, it's so beautiful. And I tell people all the time, I said, I don't mess around. I said, I already live in a small town. Traveling, I go into big cities, I said, because not only being black, some of these places don't see people that look like us very often. So you're, at least in Europe, Europeans stare. They don't come over, they don't see anything, and it's not a rude stare. I had to get used to this white glare from them that's different from American. Because I was ready to throw bows, because I was just like, do I need to be ready to fight to defend myself? Because I'm traveling by myself, I'm eating dinner by myself, and they'll just stare. And I even asked some of my staff, my Dutch staff, I was like, why do y'all stare so much? I asked them just like that. What Europeans, why do y'all stare so much? And they were like, what? And I said, I explained to them a couple of times, and he said, well, I'm kind of an eccentric dresser to European standards, I guess. And they said, well, you know, you dress a little bit differently. And I was like, I think there's more to this than this, than just me dressing differently.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, I don't, you know, and then some was like, well, yeah, some places, you know, the place I got stared at the most probably was in Budapest.
Really?
Yeah. I had a good time in Budapest. I had to go back to Budapest easily. I love Budapest too. I went during Christmas season. Oh. Budapest knows how to do Christmas.
I'm
party.
Sure they do. That city, they know how to party, and I can't imagine the lights there Christmas time.
It's the best Christmas market I've been to in Europe so far. I also realized there weren't a whole bunch of black people in Budapest.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised now, but I had to get used to the European white stare versus American white stare. And that the European white stare usually doesn't mean harm. Not maybe always, but most of the time it doesn't mean harm. They don't see people that look like you.
It's like they're checking you out, like they're doing a little investigation or something.
Yeah, because I think also too, I go on a lot of, when I do, there are places I've had, like, I do photo shoots usually in new cities I go to. As a solo traveler, I don't get good pictures of myself. So I started booking Airbnb photographers when I travel. And it's been awesome. and I get these great shots. But usually what's happening, there's this photographer with a camera, a really nice camera, you know, taking pictures of me in the city. So then I think there's a combination of, like, this black woman who's dressed nice, because I'm, of course, I'm going to dress well for my photo shoot, who has this usually white photographer following her around, taking pictures and da-da-da. And sadly, there are many European cities where black culture is still seen as, and they're still at the, you know, in regards to job market and what they're doing, is still considered at the bottom of the, you know, bottom of the pool. So I think they're looking like, where did this Negro come from? Who is she that has this person walking around, you know, taking pictures?
Yeah, they probably think you're a celebrity.
Yeah, I think that's it. They're just trying to figure out, like, what is going on here, because they're not used to seeing that. Where when I did a photo shoot in London recently with my partner, nobody really cared besides, oh, you all look very nice. But it wasn't about just two black women having a photo shoot in London with a Taiwanese photographer. You know, like, no one really batted an eye. But in there are certain countries and places in Europe where they just don't see too many black people. And if they're seeing black people, the where they come from and their, you know, their status, sadly. The assumption I think some of them may have is that they're used to seeing the black people in that country, in that area, in that region, doing a certain job, maybe servicing them. And then when you see one who's like out and about and being a tourist, they're just like, what? Who's this? So that's been an interesting experience too.
Thank you so much for sharing all that. I enjoy talking to you so much.
All right. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Remember to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you have any questions, feel free to shoot me an email at blackpackingpodcast@gmail.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/blackpacking. There are over 100,000 titles you can choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. I would personally check out Always on the Way by Stacey Adams. On the Way is travel stories of a semi-young black woman and her life overseas while trying to maintain her sanity. Check it out on audible.com/blackpacking.